This is Monday, the 19th of December, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Coming up, the UN Security Council votes to monitor the evacuation of people from the Syrian city of Aleppo.
With that presence, there may be some deterrence of what happens along the journey out of eastern Aleppo.
Also ahead, the Russian ambassador to Turkey has been shot. We will have the latest for you. And the election that officially determines who won the U.S. presidential election is underway today. It's all on today's International Edition. The UN Security Council has unanimously approved a resolution urging immediate deployment of United Nations monitors to former rebel-held eastern Aleppo, which France says is critical to prevent what they call mass atrocities by Syrian forces, especially militias. This resolution, adopted today, Monday, calls for the United Nations and other institutions to monitor evacuations from eastern Aleppo and demands that UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urgently consult Syria and other parties on security and arrangements for the immediate deployment of these monitors. The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, said the UN action is welcomed.
Today's resolution, I think, is significant in the sense that at least we now have the Council finally agreeing that people who want to leave eastern Aleppo should be able to be monitored by the United Nations, the ICRC, the Syrian Red Crescent, and others. That with that presence, there may be some deterrence of what happens along the journey out of eastern Aleppo. And there, even if people are fortunate enough, as they see it, to get on buses, we have seen people pulled off buses, their valuables stolen, and of course many reports of men people in the fighting age range being either detained, forced to the front lines, or just never heard from again. So getting these monitors in to eastern Aleppo, onto the buses, at the points of egress from the besieged part of eastern Aleppo, which is now very small but has in it tens of thousands of people still, that urgent implementation of this resolution is everything.
Joining us now is VOA's Jamie Detmer. He's been covering this story for a long time now. And Jamie, what do you think about what Samantha Power say? Is this significant? Is this going to make any difference whatsoever, the UN sending monitors into Aleppo?
Well, it's significant to actually have an agreement by the Russians. They haven't vetoed this. It's coming a bit, late in the day. We think there are only about another 16,000 civilians left in eastern Aleppo. A deal that was brokered last night has seen already 50 buses taking evacuees out, another 50 going in. So a lot are already out. I mean, obviously, however, it would be good news if there was monitoring on the ground to what happens to the remaining 15, 16,000 civilians, maybe 5,000 fighters. But the big question is, are they going to be allowed in once they arrive on the borders of Aleppo City? We've seen often agreements by the Syrian government with the UN to allow aid convoys in, for example, and then it all gets held up.
So what happens now? Who are the opposing forces here? There seems to be, obviously, there's the Syrian army. There are Russian troops fighting with them. But what kind of factions are making up the other side? And where do they stand?
Well, there are lots of different factions on both sides involved. I mean, on the government side, as well as the Russians, you have Iranian Revolutionary Guards. You have Hezbollah from Lebanon. And a lot of these negotiations are being very complex because you have to negotiate not just, say, with Damascus or Moscow, but with the Iranians and Lebanese Shia and Iraq Shia as well, for example. On the other side, mainly around Aleppo, inside Aleppo, you have more moderate, pragmatic rebel groups. But you have had, until recently, quite a few hundred Al-Qaeda-linked fighters there as well, although they're all out now. I mean, on both sides, you have tremendous divisions and not necessarily central control.
Now, if there is any kind of a lasting peace, and I guess by lasting we mean over 24 hours in Aleppo, this doesn't mean the whole war in Syria is over. Is that correct?
Certainly not, no. What you're now going to see is everything turning towards the neighbouring province of Aleppo, Idlib, which is the largest chunk of territory the rebels still control. Russian warplanes have already been bombing it. Those evacuees from Aleppo are actually going to Idlib. So you have a very large population in Idlib already from natives of Idlib. Now you've got the Aleppo civilians there as well. And what many military tacticians think is happening is that Damascus and Moscow is preparing Idlib to be what is technically called a kill box. That's where you encourage all your enemies to go. So you have them all in one place, ready to be wiped out virtually. And that's what the great fear is, that what we've just seen in Aleppo is going to be repeated in Idlib.
Jamie Detmer reporting on what is happening in Aleppo and what might lie ahead. As always, thanks so much, Jamie. Greatly appreciate
Pleasure.
It.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Let us move from what's happening in Syria to Turkey. Russia's ambassador to Ankara, Andrei Karlov, was badly wounded. There are some reports now that he might have been killed. We don't know that yet, in a gun attack while visiting an art exhibition opening in Ankara, the Turkish capital. Let us head now to, I think we're going to Istanbul now. That's where we're going. Dorian Jones is standing by for VOA. Dorian, you are in Istanbul, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, so what is the latest you have on this this attack on the Russian ambassador?
Well, what we understand is that Ambassador Andrei Karlov was addressing the opening of a gallery, Russia through Turkey. Eyes and a number of gunmen, at least one opened up fire on him, wounding him seriously, as well as a number of other people attending the ceremony. There are unconfirmed reports that the ambassador has died from the wounds, so I do stress that has not been confirmed. He was rushed to a nearby hospital. The security forces then engaged with the attackers in the building. We're still getting reports of gunfire still being heard as the attackers are still fighting with security forces. Andrei Karlov is obviously a very senior diplomatic representative here. This is one of the most serious attacks on a diplomat in Turkey's recent history.
Dorian, have there been any reports whatsoever as to motive as far as the shooting is concerned?
Well, I think that much of Turkish media is already pointing fingers at possibly radical Islamist groups, possibly linked to the Syrian conflict. I think the context of what is happening with Aleppo, there's a great deal of anger among Turkey's large religious population in this country. Turkey's also home to provide bases for many of the Syrian opposition. There have been very large protests outside the Russian consulate here in Istanbul. Thousands of people were last week against Russia's role in the operations in Syria and in particular in Aleppo. And I think that they will be the prime suspect, some Syrian connection. Though it has to be said, Turkey also is home to many Chechens who fled the conflict in Chechnya. Again, they would have grievances against Russia. But the timing of this with the events in Aleppo, I think, is a Syrian connection with possibly radical Islamist connections too.
Boy, Turkey is right in the middle, is it not, between all kinds of political, geographic, all kinds of conflicts. Is that not the case?
Well, that is right. Turkey's in the space of a week has been the victim of two major suicide bombings over the weekend. Suicide bomber attacked in soldiers in the provincial city of Kayseri. Here in Istanbul, the Saturday before, a football stadium was the target of suicide bomber, targeting police that were on duty there. There's been a wave of attacks. Also, Islamic State has been very active. In fact, in this year, over 300 people have now died in suicide bombings, be it from the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK, or the Islamic State. So Turkey is at the center of a series of conflicts on its regions within the country, and this latest attack will only add to a great deal of instability and fear that the country is slowly sliding into more chaos and more violence.
Well, once more, maybe to go over something you have already said, and that is, so far, what is the Turkish military and or police reaction to the shooting?
Well, the details are still very difficult to confirm at the moment, but the latest Turkish news reports are saying that the police are still engaging with the attackers. They are believed to be more than one, and there's been a sound of gunfire. They appear to be very heavily armed, and the fighting is still going on. And this occurred in the center of the capital, Ankara, in Çankaya. It's one of the most luxurious parts of the city. It's a home to many of the diplomatic missions. There's a lot of security nearby, so it wouldn't take long for security to be there. But I think there will be questions over the kind of protection the Russian ambassador had, given the fact of the sensitivity of the time. And it has to put this in a wider context. This comes just at a time when Turkey and Russia are rebuilding relations after last year's downing by Turkish jets of a Russian bomber operating from Syria. That saw relationship rock bottom. There are rapprochement efforts going on, but this will, again, I think, put strain on those relations. Russia will want to know what security measures were there to protect their ambassador. And tomorrow, on Tuesday, the Turkish foreign minister is due in Moscow to meet his Russian counterpart and Iranian counterpart to discuss Syria and Aleppo.
Just the beginning of what most likely is going to be a long story. Dorian Jones, thanks so much for being with us from Istanbul. Greatly appreciate it. This is International Edition, and we're going to turn our attention now, as we are going to stay on and keep following these breaking stories from that area of the world. Doug Bernard joins us now on social media. There's a lot for a lot of people to talk about.
You know, as your first two reports suggest quite clearly, Aleppo is a major topic, and social media is no different. In fact, one of the biggest trending hashtags right now on Facebook, on Twitter, and other social networks is, pardon me, hashtag Save Aleppo. There are thousands of people, many, many thousands of people sharing their concerns, their worries, this sort of sense of helplessness and powerlessness as this tragedy unfolds. There, here are just a few comments. Quote, it took 4,000 years to build Aleppo. One generation managed to tear it down in 4 years. Here's another one. I'm praying for all my brothers and sisters suffering in Aleppo. We live in a world where Apple 7s, the iPhone, can trend, but massacres won't. In this case, actually, Aleppo is trending strongly, and we expect that for some time. I think the shooting of the Russian ambassador to Turkey is still too much of a fresh story, so there really hasn't been any kind of sense of how that's coalescing in social media.
Yeah, it hasn't developed as yet.
That's exactly right, but I think that will be something to keep our eyes on in the hours and days ahead. Here in the United States, very quickly, it is the day that the Electoral College meets. Now, it doesn't meet in one place. I know you'll be explaining this a little bit later, but it meets all across the United States.
There's no Electoral College campus. No. Huh? No, okay, all right.
No IM building, no none of that. But so the 538 electors are meeting today, and one of the biggest hashtags that we're seeing trending here in the United States briefly is either hashtag Electoral College or hashtag Hamilton electors. Very briefly, that refers to some writing from Alexander Hamilton, the author of the Federalist Papers, one of the framers of the Constitution and our form of government. And it was Hamilton's view that the Electoral College served a very important duty to keep, quote, anyone, quote, not in an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications, unquote, from holding office of the president. So various people are trying to convince electors not to vote for Donald Trump. I don't expect that many will do that, in fact, but we will see, and as the story progresses.
Doug, I thank you so much. How do people get in touch with you?
Oh, they can, of course, at voanews.com, or they can send me a quick email, dbernard@voanews.com.
I thank you, sir.
Thank
Hope
you.
To see you later in this week.
Busy day.
That is Doug Bernard providing the latest for us as far as social media is concerned. This is International Edition. Among the top stories, as you've been hearing, various reports say the Russian ambassador to Turkey has been seriously wounded in a gun attack in the capital of Ankara. The tumultuous U.S. presidential election is officially being decided today, with voting in the Electoral College expected to confirm that billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump will become the country's 45th president. The head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, has been convicted of negligence by a French court for failing to challenge a $422 million payout by a state arbitration panel to a business tycoon. and the Security Council today approved the deployment of UN monitors to Aleppo as the evacuation of firefighters and civilians from the last remaining opposition stronghold in the northern city resumed after days of delays. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com, our website, and our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study by Finnish researchers and published in the journal Age and Aging suggests taking frequent sauna baths can reduce the risk of dementia, such as Alzheimer's disease. Scientists from the University of Eastern Finland followed 2,000 middle-aged men for 20 years as part of its ongoing Kuopio ischemic heart disease risk factor study. They found that participants who took sauna baths between 4 to 7 times per week were 66% less likely of being diagnosed with dementia than those doing so once a week. An earlier report from the continuing study indicated that frequent sauna bathing also considerably decreases the risk of sudden cardiac death and other such cardiac events, as well as overall mortality. According to the paper's authors, the association between sauna bathing and the risk of dementia had not been studied until now. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. We continue the next chapter in what is sometimes described as the tumultuous U.S. presidential election is playing out today, with voting in the Electoral College expected to officially confirm that billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump will become the country's next president. Politico politics reporter Kyle Cheney explains this confusing system to International Edition's Lori London.
The electors will gather in their state capitals all day Monday and cast the official vote for president. The anti-Trump folks, they're not viewed as very likely to succeed in what they're doing. It's an extremely uphill battle for them to convince 37 minimum Republicans to abandon Donald Trump. That's a huge number. No, it's never come close to that in this country's history. And, however, if they were to do that, it would actually send the election to the House of Representatives, which would vote in January to resolve the contest.
You don't think it's very likely that there will be 37 GOP electors that will vote against Donald Trump?
It's hard to imagine. There's only one who's spoken out publicly saying he will definitely be voting against Trump. So there's really got to be 36 more. And we've seen no evidence that these people are emerging. The groups trying to make it happen claim that they're making inroads and making progress.
Kyle Cheney, politics reporter for Politico, speaking with my colleague Lori London. Let's move on to something a bit lighter. This holiday season has a lot of offerings for moviegoers who may feel like celebrating with a film chock full of special effects, nods to Hollywood classic, A-list actors, thrills, action, and of course, romance. Some of these films will also dominate the award system after New Year. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more on that.
You're fired.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, I see the decorations. Good luck in the new year.
I just heard you play, and I wanted...
Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling sweep us off our feet with their romantic musical La La Land, about two struggling artists in Los Angeles trying to follow their dreams while they fall passionately in love with each other.
City of stars, there's so much that I can't see.
The bittersweet story is accentuated by haunting musical score and infectiously upbeat choreography. The on-screen chemistry between the two stars is reminiscent of old Hollywood couples such as Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire. This film is not only joyful, moving, and inspiring, it is a sure winner at the awards season and a must for the holidays.
A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know how to destroy it.
For those who love Star Wars and are especially attached to the original trilogy, Rogue One could satisfy. The battles, the starships, the rebels fighting a desperate war against the Empire while the Death Star looms over them, going back to the 70s, but in IMAX 3D with even bigger and better special effects. Only The Grinch would offer spoilers, but we can certainly assure you that you will enjoy it till the surprises at the very end. Felicity Jones stars as another strong female character in the Star Wars franchise, and she's surrounded by a decent cast.
We've traced his bloodline back 500 years.
Assassin's Creed is based on the popular video game and combines great martial arts scenes with the storyline of Callum Lynch, who unlocks his genetic memories through a revolutionary technology and experiences the adventures of his ancestor, Aguilar, in 15th century Spain.
Welcome to the Spanish Inquisition.
This high-action film is the perfect hybrid video game slash movie, which will attract the gaming community as well as fans of the film's high-caliber stars, Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard. Those sci-fi lovers who crave an intelligent plot and a character-driven psychological drama will definitely enjoy Arrival, a tense story of extraterrestrial contact with mystical implications. Amy Adams has already garnered awards and nominations for her interpretation as the linguist trying to establish a language with the aliens.
Now that's a proper introduction.
We boarded the Avalon with a destination.
In Passengers, another sci-fi flick, Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt are on a journey to a distant colony planet. But a machine malfunction in their sleep chambers wakes them 90 years early. Soon they discover that it may not have been an accident, as the ship that is transporting thousands of souls is spiraling towards a star. This high-budget film has special effects, popular actors, and mystery, so it promises to do well at the box office. Whether it will garner praise remains to be seen, but it will surely put moviegoers who want to see collapsing stars, cool space ship gadgets, and romance in a festive mood. Happy holidays. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
Some interesting motion pictures for you to see over the holiday weekend coming up. You have been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA _IE. Many breaking stories. Stay with us there on social media and on our programming. Thanks for joining us. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer Daniel Crafton. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Throughout this holiday season, the United States government is profiling the cases of prisoners unjustly held around the world and the families they leave behind. The campaign is sponsored by U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, and is known as #FreeToBeHome Political Prisoner Campaign. The stories of these individuals highlight the broader struggle faced by so many families of political prisoners who have to commemorate countless family occasions with loved ones behind bars. One such individual is Ukrainian film director Oleg Sentsov, who was arrested in Crimea in 2014, shortly after Russia's occupation of the peninsula, in retaliation for his vocal opposition to the occupation. In 2015, a Russian court convicted him and a fellow activist, Alexander Kolchenko, of plotting terrorist attacks in Crimea in a trial that Amnesty International described as redolent of Stalinist-era show trials. Heather McGill, a researcher at Amnesty International, went on to say, "This trial was fatally flawed and credible allegations of torture and other ill treatment have been ignored by the court." Sentsov was given a 20-year sentence and is incarcerated in a penal colony in the Siberian region of Yakutia, about 3,500 miles from Ukraine's capital, Kiev. He has not seen his two young children or wife since. His co-defendant, Kolchenko, received a 10-year sentence. At least 10 Ukrainians are serving long jail sentences in Russia following dubious trials. Others are in captivity in separatist-run eastern Ukraine or in occupied Crimea. In a letter from Sentsov, smuggled out of prison in September, he wrote, "There are many of us held in Russia and even more in Donbass. Some have been freed, others hope and wait." Sentsov was detained for exercising his universal rights. He represents thousands of other prisoners unjustly detained around the world. The United States, said Ambassador Power, calls on all governments, including Russia, to release their political prisoners. Political prisoners should be free to believe. They should be free to be loved. They should be free to be home.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.